Richard Wallace is in business in Collinsville, the town where he was born and where he grew up, in the Presbyterian Church. Rich and I are married and blessed with 4 children and 9 grandchildren. He served as president of Good Shepherd for 6 years from 1980 to 1985. Rich, does it seem like 20 years ago that all that happened?
Absolutely not. I'm often reminded by Bill Cochran that those years, not because I happened to be the president, but those years in the church were the best, if not his favorite, in his long ministry. They were also certainly the exciting and busiest years of my service in the church. It all went too quickly. I remember, for example, Joan, my Baptist secretary, for years telling me that if she had to type one more set of minutes for a meeting or one more agenda for a committee at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, she was going to quit. Her girls, however, and her grandchildren became students at Good Shepherd, and now her great-grandchildren are members of the school body.
After we were married, we attended Luther Memorial in St. Louis for 3 years and then transferred to Good Shepherd in Collinsville in 1969. What's your memory of that?
I remember every Sunday afternoon when we got home from St. Louis, Pastor Coleman would show up at the front door and say, don't you think it's time to move to Collinsville? You shouldn't be in St. Louis. You should be here. And I remember finally after a couple of years of that, he showed up one day and I said, bring in the papers. We're ready. And that was the end of the Sunday visits. But I also remember that a majority of the members at Good Shepherd at that time had belonged to another church and had transferred there at the beginning of the church as a mission church outreach. I was impressed by their devotion, their hard work, and the warm welcome they gave to me and extended to my family and to all of us. And I never felt like a stranger there.
And you jumped right into congregational involvement from the get-go.
They didn't give you a lot of choice there. I think it all started with my first visit to the church office to visit with Pastor Coleman. And I was somewhat surprised that he and the secretary at that time, Arlene Simmons, shared one big office. And I thought, this is rather strange. But Pastor Coleman had one desk, and Arlene had two. One when she had to sit beside him and do her work, and the second one out in the hallway when he had company or was talking to a parishioner, she'd escape. And I thought, this is really rather awkward. And my first job, I think, was talking to the Board of Church Property and the elders and suggesting, couldn't we maybe cut this office in half, and would you give me permission to kind of work on that? And like any time you say, can I have permission, the answer is always yes. And I contacted an old carpenter contractor friend of mine, and together we were able to divide the office in two. So Arlene had her own, Pastor had his own, and it was really quite nice. And Arlene and I became real good friends after that. I took the opportunity to keep appointing me to other jobs. And my first was appointment to the then existing building committee. It was the third building committee, as I remember, at the church. The third of 8. Can you believe we finished 8 projects to date? And I'm sure there's still a lot more to come. During that period, I also graduated from a chicken cutter. Now, you may want to know what that is, but a chicken cutter is somebody who cuts up chickens for a chicken fry. And I had that job for several years because we had a chicken Sunday dinner fundraiser every year. And the coveted position there was really not a chicken cutter. As you can imagine, it was a chicken fryer. And I remember finally graduating to be a chicken fryer. And I thought, I'm finally breaking into this church as a chicken fryer. It was great. I believe this was also the time that I served as the attorney for the Southern Illinois District, which was very rewarding for me, and I enjoyed that job very much.
You did that for 10 years, and I believe there were 91 churches in the district at that time. I love the chicken dinner story. We did that every May, and everything was from scratch. We bought pies, and those days are gone, but it was...
I never learned how to make Hazel Spooneman slaw. I wish I did. I have the recipe, but I could never repeat that.
I'm trying to come close, but she had a good slaw. One good thing leads to another, so by the time 1980 rolls around, did you kind of know what to expect?
In a way. The ministry at Good Shepherd continued to grow, and we recognized shortly into my term that it was growing quickly and there was a lot of work to do. We developed a master plan. It was a committee which we projected where we would be in the future, but we were continually changing this as we had new challenges and unforeseen questions came up in projects. It was fun. We enjoyed it. It was a lot of hard work, but we worked at it continually.
What was the congregation going through at that time?
It was going through a period of growth, as was Collinsville. Both were growing and expanding. We had an active evangelism committee at that time, and our program, and our growth included, as you might expect, young families. Our first challenge we felt was, what was our role in the community as a private school provider? That became the big challenge at that time.
How did you see the Lord moving in and through that from there?
As I said, we were growing quickly, and we began an intensive study to reevaluate our then joint effort in a day school with Holy Cross Lutheran Church. Should we continue to participate with them in a joint effort? Should we consolidate and just go to their campus? Should we come to our campus? Should we split the entire thing for K through 4 and 5 through 8? And we continued to study through the entire summer. And in addition to the study, we did a lot of data collecting and research. And at the end of the summer, we came to the conclusion that if Good Shepherd was going to stay in the school business, that we would best serve ourselves and the Lord and our community if we started our own standalone private school.
And Pastor Kastens was the pastor then. How excited was he about starting another school?
It was always very difficult to determine his exact level of excitement. I loved him. Everybody loved him. But he had the ability to sit back and let the congregation decide what they wanted to do. He would give them some guidance, but he'd listen. He'd come to all the meetings, and he'd let them come up with these plans. And at the end, in the final meeting of these planning things, in about 5 sentences, he could put the whole thing together and make good sense out of it. And we were all on the same path, and away we went.
I remember when he came from Hawaii, he said he'd done some schools and he'd right. had that experience, but he wasn't really sure he wanted to do that again. And then apparently the Holy Spirit moved everybody, like you said, to be on the same
page. We were almost the same age, he and I, and in retrospect, I know why he said that. I think once we got into it, I realized I was too old to be doing this too, but we enjoyed it.
Yeah.
In a matter of months after we completed our study, the school opened, we started with K through 8th grade. We had a great staff. We had four brand new beautiful classrooms, and we had a few portables that were refurbished to fill out the rest of the space. We knew that we had done all this in a matter of September to June, and we knew we had to open the school in the following September. And we just didn't have enough room. We didn't anticipate the number of people who would be interested in the school when we started. We counted our own kids. We added a few extras. And all of a sudden, there were a lot more than we could handle. So I took upon myself to do this crazy search of portable classrooms. I had seen some in a Lutheran church in St. Louis, and I called there. No, those were spoken for. So we found these in Cahokia in the back of an old school there. And we decided one morning that Pastor Kastens and Bill Cochran and I would drive down and take a look at them and see if they could be salvaged. And so Pastor said, I'll drive. And so Cahokia is pretty many hills away from here, and it's hot summer morning. And when we get to the top of the hill, I noticed that Pastor Kastens would put his car in neutral, and we'd coast down the hill. And we did that for a couple of hills, and Bill's giving me these wide eyes from the front seat, like, what is going on here? And I said, Pastor, I think it's against the law to turn off your engine when you're driving. But what he was doing, of course, was saving gas and energy. That was him. He's the same guy that would get to church early on Sunday morning, bend over and pick up cigarette butts, if any, in front of the church and other trash, and sweep the walks. And if he was also a conserver of energy. I remember one night I had to go to church for something when he was here. I had a key. Since lost it. But I had a key, and I walked in. The church is totally dark. It's the middle of winter time, and I can hear this booming voice coming from the sanctuary. And I went in, and Pastor Cassens was there by himself in the pulpit practicing his sermon. It was an interesting experience.
And it was in the dark.
And it was totally in the dark.
Because he was saving.
Because he was saving energy. It was probably cold and in the dark. But that was him.
Oh, it sure was. What was the biggest challenge during those 6 years of your presidency?
I remember when we started the school, we had some consultants. And the consultant said, you can't start a school in 1 year with no building, no books, no desks. It's a folly. It would never work. So we listened and we prayed some more. And finally we decided, let's do it. And we did it. And with God's blessings, the rest of it's history. Speaking of the portables, I think we should include those as the ninth building project. I can verify the other eight. But this had to be the ninth because it was a combined effort of everybody. Good Shepherd's not only blessed with great people, but it's blessed with great talent. And we had plumbers, electricians. Elmer Burstadt can do anything and usually does. But it turned out that Chris Ford, who's a member of our congregation, really understood and had experience with mobile homes. And his service was invaluable in getting these things put together, erected, to make them look like the Taj Mahal. In fact, we even ended up with great big planter boxes attached to each of them full of flowers. One became our school library. And they were great. Many people complained about them, but I, for one, was kind of sad to see them pulled off. Hopefully they went to another school somewhere. But when you think about it, they're not connected to our existing school. They're out in the middle of somewhere. So they had to have water. They did use the school for bathroom facilities, but we had to have water in them, electricity. I think they even had some air conditioning. But it turned out that they were really kind of fun buildings. It was a good experience, and I would have been remiss without thanking all the people, including people like Bob Nagy, the plumber, and whoever else in the congregation lent so much expertise and help. And, of course, it was all gratis. I remember even we had a load of dirt put there to fill up these big planter boxes, and I had a contractor friend, and I said, can we borrow your backhoe? And he said, sure, I'll just drop it off in the parking lot. So I went one evening, and I forgot who was there, but there was the backhoe and these piles of dirt and these big cribs that just looked like they wanted me to fill them up. And I'd never even started a backhoe. So I'm trying to figure out, I see them run at a pile of dirt and fill it and tilt it, and I learned practice on tilting and filling, but I didn't realize that you have to attack a load of dirt to get it to fill up the bucket. And I forgot who it was, but a neighbor, somebody who's always there at the church watching, said, let me show you how to do that. So he got on, of course, ran at the dirt and filled up the buckets. But it was another great experience at Good Shepherd. I forgot who ended up painting the exterior of those things. But I could tell you so many stories. I could tell you about Charles Wenzel, who was automobile body man by hobby. We bought a flock of used desks, and Charles had this great idea about we could set up an assembly line down in the basement of the old church, and some guys could sand, some guys could clean, and at the end he would spray, and we had this thing, and I think we must have sprayed 50 in one thing, but they look like brand new. That was Charles's idea, his effort, and these are just story after story. Good Shepherd has always thrived in the face of a challenge. That's been part of the history of that church. They're what has made us what we are, I think, today. We always had a special way of addressing challenges and problems, and that was by a committee, big committees. We encouraged participation of anybody who wanted to be involved in a committee, and we always included those people who we felt stood on the other side of the, whatever issue we were discussing. And the secret to that was that they always became supporters at the end of our meetings.
What was a standout during your terms of office?
I could never give you a standout. There were standouts, but I couldn't tell you a standout. One, of course, was not quite during my term of office, but was the beginning of the school. The school was a wonderful endeavor. It continues today. It continues to grow and to improve daily. That certainly had to be a standout. The other is a new sanctuary, which came certainly after my term, but there's a reason to mention that now, and I'll pick up on it a minute later, but it's a gorgeous building and certainly another standout. I think the calling of our ministers had to be a standout. We learned a great deal through the process of calling, and we were blessed with marvelous ministers, and beyond that, great staff in the school and the church. That was a wonderful experience. I think the standout, however, was during this period of time, we came to recognize the power and the presence of the Holy Spirit in our deliberations. Not that we didn't always understand that, but we had this better recognition of how important that is. And it helped us resolve our issues. It helped us get, and it was responsible for reaching conclusions. Years ago, we adopted a very simple philosophy at Good Shepherd, and we would work hard and fervently, and we would pray always for his guidance until we were one mind. A unanimous decision at the end was always what we sought, and if not, we put it aside. We continued to work more, meet more, and pray harder. And finally, at the end, we would come to a peaceful resolve, which we unanimously agreed upon. We have always been most grateful, too, talking about these standouts, to those original church members. And I mean the people from the began it as a mission church, and we've never forgotten their amazing vision, their support of everything that goes on there, their wisdom, and also leading by example. I remember many of them saying when we were talking about a school that, gee, I always wanted to be buried from a new church, meaning you could pretty quickly see what their preference was. Why would we get involved in a lengthy school endeavor when the people who started it and supported everything would say, I just really want to be buried from a new church? But in keeping with the way they were and how I described them, they unanimously elected to vote for the school effort and to complete that or continue that until we could do the church. During the period of time of the school until the new church, however, a good many of them died. They never had the privilege of being buried from a new church, but they certainly had the privilege of being buried from their church.
That's a beautiful part of our history, really.
It is, yeah.
While I have you at the mic, I know we're talking about your two terms as president of the congregation, but like so many others, you wore many hats. And one of the hats you wore, because you kept it in your front seat, was a hard hat, because you were chairman of the Master Plan Committee. And Steve Harris referred to that as the best decision he ever made, was to appoint you chairman of that. But do you want to just comment on that? That was the master plan for yet another building project, one of the eight. It was for the sanctuary itself. That was a what million dollar? How many million dollars?
I don't remember. It was a million hours. It's our new and existing sanctuary. It's an interesting story. I don't want to continue too far, but we did everything like I said we did a minute ago. We started with a committee. We worked hard, and we didn't leave anything unturned. The first one was, I remember the first thing was seeing what kind of a building did we want. We always thought our existing church was kind of homely, so we wanted something that was striking, and we had an idea of renting a bus. And so one of the first things we did, we rented a bus, and we selected five or six different churches in the St. Louis area, not necessarily all Lutheran, but some new churches, some that have been remodeled, some contemporary style, some traditional style. And we took a bus tour. And we'd get to one church, we'd get out, there'd be someone there to meet us and take us through. And we were all writing and getting ideas. And in fact, from one church, we incorporated a number of these ideas. Then we ended up at Ted Drew's. That's kind of a famous place in St. Louis. And that was a surprise for the entourage in the bus. And they said, where are we going next? And we have one place to go yet. We went to Ted Drew's, all had a big ice cream, got back in the bus and talked about what we had done on the way home.
If Ted Drew's had been there, he would have appreciated it because he is a lifelong Lutheran. All right, back to the hat story.
I think the hat you're referring to is the hard hat I kept in the front seat of my car after I was appointed building chairman for the sanctuary. And it was an easy job for me as far as getting there and wearing the hat because I had to go past the church to get to the office, past the church to come home. So usually every morning after the construction started, I would stop and visit with the contractor or the carpenters or just to see what was going on. It was fun to keep up with it. But back to the church itself, a few interesting stories. After we made the bus trip and we started to put together ideas, and I remember, by the way, recently I was going through some boxes of files, and one of the last meetings we had, full committee meetings for the building project, was number 63. And, of course, we kept minutes and reported and updated at each one, but along the way, we selected an architectural firm from St. Louis County. We were very pleased with them and their initial ideas. And during the first part of the design phase, the lead architect died. It's agreed that his daughter, who was with the firm, would take over the project. She had been to all of the meetings, and she was familiar with it. And unfortunately, during the next phase of it, I believe she became overwhelmed, partly, I assume, from the death of her father, and asked to be relieved. And so for interim, they were working with a firm in St. Louis that was doing some of the side jobs, meaning the structural steel and some other things that had to be in the church. And they had our plans, and I remember that they were reluctant to give them up and without a fee. And David Alkus and I made an effort, and David was successful in getting the plans returned to us. And in the meantime, we recognized that we had a young architect in the church. And he had been to some of the meetings, and we'd use him, really, as just a committee member. And his name was Dan Herford. He was rather new in the church, great guy. Dan said, sure, he would help, and went over, gave him some time to go over the plans, see if he was comfortable. And he came back and said, yes, he was honored. He'd be happy to do it. He just did a wonderful job. And he did a wonderful job in putting together some of the errors that had taken, or correcting them first. And in fact, Dan has stayed with us as our architect, and he's presently designing or finishing the design of our eighth building project, which is a new preschool being moved to our campus. And it's a $4 million addition, I can tell you. By the way, we have 12 acres, and it's getting pretty full.
Early Childhood Center is what he's working on now.
I want to just share a few more things that happened with the building. We were careful in selecting whoever we did, and we have an existing organ that we had redone. And meeting these people along the way, we had a company from Pennsylvania that furnished the pews. We had another company who did the stained glass windows. We had another company that designed the altars. The fellow who did the furnishings in an ambo, if you know what that is, we have an ambo. And our stained glass, which is contemporary but lovely.
What is an ambo?
It's really an altar.
All right.
And we only have one. We don't have we have a pulpit. It's a pulpit, plus we have an altar. We do not have a lectern. I remember one day with my hard hat on talking to a fellow who was finishing up some cabinet work on the organ, and I said, this has really been an interesting project. Well, he was playing out of the Lutheran hymnal. That's what started. And I said, are you Lutheran? And he said, no, I'm not Lutheran. I just happen to love the Lutheran hymnal, and I'm tuning the organ. And he said, frankly, I'm a Catholic. And he said, so is the Wicks Company. And I said, well, it's interesting you said that, because We have a Jewish firm, I think, from Pennsylvania installing the pews, Charlie. You're here doing this work. We have all local contractors doing the other work, and we're learning a lot. It's a great mix. And he said, yeah, he said, we do a lot of work for Catholics and Lutherans. He said, in fact, we just came back from a convent in Missouri. And I said, I bet that was interesting. He said, yeah. He said, what they do is they sew vestments. And we said, well, who do you sell these to and whatever? And during our conversation, the head of this group, the nun, said, oh, she said, we have a lot of those Catholics that come, but really we sew for our boys at Concordia Seminary. And I said, that was really an interesting comment to make, because we have all these people building this wonderful building and all these different faiths. You're Catholic playing the Lutheran hymn from the hymnal. You're telling these stories about what we wear. We have other companies coming from around the country. And I said, it's really been a great group of people. We've learned a lot. In fact, we hired a group in St. Louis to do our art glass, the Fry Art Glass Company, who in turn employed Steve Erstbaumer, who eventually became a monk, who was our artist. He really designed all of the artwork, or all the windows, and the furnishings, including the baptismal font, which came from, I think, Minnesota. But the interesting thing with Steve was when we started, he said, you know, I'd really like to do some classes with you people. I know you meet a lot. I know you have studied everything here. Why don't we take two different meetings, and I'll teach you about church architecture and why we call things the way we call them from a historical standpoint. So we agreed, and we had little books, and we studied Ambos, that's where that came from. And we have, for instance, today we have these gorgeous art glass works that tell a story, including Luther's seal in a contemporary design. And then Steve told us about, we had ideas about candles, we had ideas about crosses, and we learned that there's nothing in our church that's artificial. We don't have electric lights. We only have real candles. We have wood and real flowers. And it's very, very simple. And the reason for that is, as we were told from the early Catholic days, is that you don't distract from the gospel that way at all, or what's going on in the church, because you're focused only on the cross, the simple altar, and the ambo, and the baptismal font. And that theme is carried out in the church windows, stained glass windows.
As a past president, do you have opportunities for input at this point?
I think all of the past presidents would agree that you can't really become a past president. I think you become a president emeritus, if that makes sense, because you're still involved, and all of them that are still here are still involved. They're on call for committee work. They're willing to work at any time. They're willing to assist in projects and to share whatever collective knowledge and wisdom we may have together. And in fact, Wally Streeter had a great idea recently. It's a past president's group, and they're only there to be a sounding board and to share ideas and to hear questions that they might be able to assist with. I think it was a great idea, and I think it's going to help tie together us now, or we, who are the older people now, and all the new younger people, because we have the new presidents, the old presidents, some of the original ones, and we know the history, and we can help put this all together. I think not only as a past president, but as a member, mostly I love personally what Good Shepherd has meant to me and to my life, and also to my family, for which I will ever be eternally grateful.
Rich, thanks for sharing all these stories with us. It's fascinating to hear these memories, and I happen to know that you have boxes and boxes of notes somewhere stored about church history and different projects, and you've been able to sit down without notes and just talk to us. So someday I hope you put those notes into something that somebody can pick up on.